Good evening.
Good evening.
There we go. It's good to be here. I missed you all this morning, but glad to be here now, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to be up here and to bring you a lesson from God's Word. So, I just finished a book recently by an author that I really like that not many people have heard of. His name's George MacDonald. You might remember me having mentioned him up here before. But in this book, the main character his name's Cosmo, and he's like, I think he's 14 when the novel starts. And he's just not afraid of things, and that's sort of one of his main character traits. I've got a couple quotes, passages from the book here I'll read real quick. He was in some situation, he was afraid, I don't remember what it was, but I'm starting kind of in the middle of a passage. It says, his fear threatened to turn him to clay, but he met it with scorn, strove against it, would not, and did not yield. And in another place it says, he was a boy of courage and feared nothing so much as yielding to fear. That's what he was afraid of. So this was kind of reading this... it's not necessarily something I didn't already know, but it still seemed like kind of a realization suddenly that he just decided not to be afraid in these two passages I read, and in several other passages of the book. You could see he made up his mind that he wouldn't be, and he hated being afraid. He's like, I'm not going to do it. If he started getting afraid, he just said no, and he would just, not be afraid. And that it seems almost absurdly simple that all it is just that act of will. But I think that is important, and I think that's an important lesson for us, is just to make that decision, to not give in to that fear. And I think it's sort of in a matter of discipline, I guess, of our minds, that those doubts and fears sort of pile in. It's also an emotional thing, right, that the fear wells up, but I think it's just an act of saying, I'm not going to think about it that way. I'm going to look to God, I think, is the main thing, and just decide that we won't be afraid. So this is a simple lesson tonight. I've pretty much summed up the points I want to make, but I'm going to talk a little bit longer, obviously, about it. So I want to look in Revelation chapter 2. Just at one verse we'll find in that chapter. Revelation chapter 2, and in verse 10, this comes from the letter church in Smyrna. Jesus says to them, do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested. And for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. And there are other similar passages like this, and I find when I'm reading things like that or reading other places are when Jesus says, don't fear those who can kill the body, and I realize that I don't ever put this into words, but my main thought when I read those things is usually like, that sounds terrifying, like, that sounds really scary. I'm glad I've never had to face something like where I might get killed, or this situation here just sounds like, Jesus picked about the worst way he could to comfort these people by saying, the devil's going to come and get you. He's going to put you in jail for 10 days, and he's going to do all these awful things. And I'm not going to tell you exactly what they were, but you can imagine. It'll be pretty bad, and it just seems like not all that comforting. But he does say this to comfort them. He says, don't fear. I'm telling you exactly what's going to happen so that when it happens, you know that I already decided you were going to go through this. I'm happening to you. I'm still in control. Don't worry. I just think it's interesting that's the way that works. And another passage, the same sort of principle, is in John chapter 13. In this one, he just says directly what I just said here. John chapter 13. And in verse 18, about halfway through the verse there, it says, the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. I'm telling you this now before it takes place, so that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. So he's telling them, I'm telling you this now. You're going to see it happen, and then you're going to know, you're going to remember that. So basically he's saying, I'm telling you so that you'll believe in me. And in Revelation, I think it's a similar idea that I'm telling you this so that you're not afraid. And it's just, it's as simple as just doing something. He says, don't be afraid. That's a command. He says, do not fear. So it's just a matter of us deciding, are we going to do that or are we not? When those fearful thoughts come up in us, are we just going to decide to put them away, or are we going to listen to them and heed them? And it starts to, you know, drown you in those sort of thoughts. And that's the thing. I mean, I stand up here, and it's easy for me to say, you know, don't be afraid. And I'm making it sound over simple. I'm making it sound ridiculously simple. That all we have to do is look to God. All we have to do is know that it's in God's hands, and we're not afraid. But it is that simple. What makes it complicated is when we look at the situation, we look at the waves, we think, oh my gosh, Satan has me in this prison and he's tormenting me, and Jesus said this is going to go on for 10 days and I don't know how I'm going to get through this. Like, this is something I don't have the means to overcome. I don't, you know, it's one worrying and doubtful thought after another that comes on us in trials, and we just say, it becomes suddenly way too complicated and stressful, and we don't see a way out of it. And I think that's the lesson here is it's really complicated, but if you look to him and obey and don't fear, all of a sudden it's simple. All of a sudden it's just, what am I supposed to do? It's not necessarily that the fear will disappear. You know, we might still be afraid. We might still be, you know, we might still feel in our hearts like we don't want to do that thing, but we know at least what to do, and we say, I'm going to do that. I've decided, and nothing's going to move me. You know, it's all those, how will I do this, or what about if this happens, or what am I going to do when this situation arises? It's all those thoughts that, and I'm not saying we should. You know, sometimes I think those things are good in terms of preparing for something that we can prepare for. But when Jesus tells them, you know, the devil's going to come and put you in prison, he's not saying it so that they can, like, plan for that. He's not saying that so they can, like, figure out a way to avoid being put into prison. Or, like, watch out because the devil's coming, and if you're smart, you'll be able to get away from it. But otherwise, you're going to get put in prison. He's not telling them that so that they can find a way out of it. He's saying, this is going to happen. So just don't be afraid when it happens. He's saying, just face it, go through it, and if you do, you know, those who overcome, I will give a crown of life. So that's, I think, what our problem is so often, is we try to avoid it, or we try to figure out how we are going to get ourselves through it. And that's, both of those are misunderstandings of what he's telling us. He's saying, I'm going to get you through it. Just keep believing that. That's the goal for us, and that's the hard part, is to keep believing that, that he is in control, even when things are bad. So all of this got me, I thought of an analogy here, and I've probably used a dog analogy up here before. Dog analogies and running analogies seem to be my favorites. Not sure why, but I was thinking about how my dogs, the only time we put them in the car was to take them to the vet or to take them to the kennel if we went on vacation, and they didn't really like either of those places. And, you know, a lot of dogs, if you even say the word vet, they know that something bad is about to happen, and they will just refuse to cooperate. They won't, you know, you'll have to drag them and, you know, pick them up, and they're thrashing around, you put them in the back of the car, and they just don't want anything to do with it. And that's how we are, I think, sometimes. I think that's a good way to look at it is, you know, if he tells us something or we think something scary is going to happen, we suddenly become those people, like, looking for a way out, looking for something else, you know, anything else but what he wants us to do, which is just to go through it, which isn't always necessary, but when he says, you know, you're going to be taken by the devil, you know, it's going to happen. Like he just said, it's going to happen. So so a lot of the times then he has to hit us and drag us and pick us up and lift us, and he has to do everything just to get us to comply. instead of us just being those obedient people, instead of us just doing what he said and trusting in him. And again, I know I'm not making light of anyone's sufferings or hardships or dark times, because I know it's hard. You know, all of us face those, and all of us have to go through them. And I'm not saying it won't be painful or scary, but and that's what Jesus didn't say in that Revelation passage. He didn't say it's going to be real easy. Don't worry about it. Like, it's not going to hurt you at all. You know, he didn't say any of those things. He said, you know, this is going to be hard, but just get through it. Just trust me. That when you'll get to the other side, and I'll be there. You know, I'll be there through the whole thing, but you know, you won't think I'm there. So anyway, I guess what I kind of got off my dog analogy there, but we should be those good dogs who say, you know, it doesn't matter if he can say vet to us, he can trust us, he can tell us this is what's going to happen, and we will just believe him, we will trust him, and we'll be compliant and not be afraid, because that just makes it so much harder for the dog owner to have to sit there and look at the dog pouting and making those noises and being, you know, it's like, I don't want to do this to you either, but it has, you know, we have to do this. So not making it any harder on him than we have to. So I guess I'll look at two scriptures here to sort of illustrate this good dog, bad dog thing I'm trying to work. Matthew chapter 16. And in verse 21, it says, "From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord, this shall never happen to you.' But Jesus turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man.'" So that's obviously what we are not to do, that he can't, you know, Peter was here in this instance, he couldn't be trusted with that information. Jesus tries to, he's like, "I'm telling you what's going to happen so you don't worry about it." And all Peter wants to say is, "It's not going to happen. We're not going to let, it's a human sympathy." And that's what Jesus tells him. He goes, all you care about is that my physical body not be hurt. And Jesus says, That's not what God cares about. What God cares about in this case is the salvation, the redemption of his creation through Jesus Christ. You know, like the greatest thing done since creation is going to be done here. And what Peter says is, "No, I'm not going to let that happen." And that's what we're like. God's trying to do good things, and we're saying, "No, you're not. I'm not going to let you do that." You know, whether it's us or somebody else that we're pitying, we're still trying to stop what God is trying to carry out. So, and again, that doesn't mean saying that these bad things are good. You know, we can all agree that the Son of God being put to death on a cross was probably the most evil thing that was ever done. But that's what, you know, the best thing, salvation of us, has come from that. So, you know, it's not to say that we approve of it, or we don't sympathize with those who go through it, or we don't say, "I'm sorry that's happening to you." But behind all that, we have to remember it's God who's over us all. So another well-known verse in Romans chapter 8. You probably don't even need to turn to it if you know it. Or even if you don't, you're going to hear it right now. Romans chapter 8, verse 28. Paul says, "We know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose." So again, this is a hard, I mean, as encouraging as it should be, it's a hard verse for us to hear and to believe. We don't always believe that's true. We don't believe all things work together for good to those who love God. Or at least it's hard to, that's the fight. That's the struggle we have, is to keep believing that that's true. So I think it's, I've heard it said in several different places, I think, that for a Christian, there are not, like, coincidences. You know, there aren't just misfortunes or, "Oh, no, that was catastrophic that happened to you." You know, there are bad things that happen in their lives, but it's not like an accident. It's not a mistake. It's not that God just couldn't stop that from happening or whatever. It's, you know, it had to happen. It happened because that was the way all things work together for good, is what I'm trying to say there. So that's the good example. That's what we need to remember. That's how we need to be. Another point that I would like to make is that when we do start to feel fear coming, this is just, and maybe this won't make sense to anybody, and maybe it's just me, but I notice a lot of times that I start to be afraid, and what I'll do is I'll say, oh, I'll just say a prayer, and then I'll feel better. And it's, I'm not saying that we don't trust that God hears us and believe in him, but a lot of times the prayer is a prayer, it's a prayer of panic. And I'm just saying, maybe if I just do this thing, if I just make this prayer, this panic will go away. And I think it's different than deciding to believe in God. It's like the prayer is not. Let's turn to James chapter 1, and then this will make more sense. I always try to explain everything up front, and I think sometimes it's just harder that way. James chapter 1, and in verse 5 starting. James says there, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all, without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. That person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He's a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. And that's what I think it is. When we have that panic on us, we're doubting. We're already doubting. And I think sometimes, a lot of times, my prayers are just sort of a compulsive act that I'm trying to do to erase my fear. And it's sort of like a doubting prayer that I'm offering just so that I'll feel better, just because I don't feel good, and I want it to feel better, and I say, maybe if I do this thing, I'll feel better. And in that sense, it's double-minded. I'm not praying for God's will. I'm not believing that he's going to do this thing. I'm just trying to take away the bad feeling that I have in my heart. It's a panicked prayer. I guess what I'm trying is, first, we have to decide that we believe God. First, we have to make that decision that, you know, to push away the fear. That's what I started with here, is that decision not to be afraid, to know that God is in control. And then we can make our prayer and say, with calm, already believing that God hears us, you know, God, please help me through this situation. And then it's a simple prayer. It's not me babbling on and on and on until I think I feel better, and just making it worse with every word I say. And again, maybe this is just something that not everybody struggles with, but I put it out there for your consideration. If what I just said makes no sense, then feel free to forget about it, but otherwise, hopefully it's helpful. So, and one other example of that, I think about when Peter is walking on the water. And again, you don't have to turn there. It's a pretty well-known. I've looked at it, Matthew 14. But Peter's walking on the water, and we all remember this. He believes. He's doing it. He's trusting in Jesus, and he's walking on water. And all of a sudden, he looks at the waves. He's overcome with fear. He starts sinking. And when he's sinking, he has that panicked prayer, Lord, save me. And we see that Jesus hears him. You know, Jesus hears that prayer. Jesus sticks his hand out and picks him up. But he still rebukes Peter. He says, you didn't believe. Why didn't you believe me? You know, you have little faith. Why'd you doubt? And so that's all I'm saying there is we make that prayer already believing that God will hear us, not. If we make it in a panic, he still hears. You know, he's not deaf, but it's better for us if we already trust him and know that he's the Lord. So I want to look at two more verses quickly. I know we've already been flipping around a lot, but I don't think anyone here minds. Hebrews chapter 10, at the end of that chapter. Sort of another way of thinking about it. Starting in verse 37 there, the Hebrew writer says, yet a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve their souls. And again, just that idea of not shrinking back, that's a decision. This always makes me think of you know, maybe like a field of battle or something, you know, where you're just someone, you're running out there. You know that you've just got to go meet the opponent. You don't shrink back. You don't crouch down and duck and run. Because I think all of those things will make you even more afraid. All of those things will, not only will you not be doing what you're supposed to do, but now you're causing harm to all those around you, and you're terrified even more than you were. If you make the decision, I'm going to just do what I came out here to do, forget everything else, that's the only way to do it. I don't know if any of you have seen Saving Private Ryan. I just saw it for the first time recently, and there's that scene where, I can't remember the guy's name, but he kind of wusses out, and his friends upstairs get killed over it, and it's so hard to watch. But I think that's exactly the analogy, is that we can't be those who shrink back. Even if no one had died over that, it's still hard to see that shrinking back. And it's what we can't do. We have to believe that he's there. That it's not to say we won't get killed or hurt. It's that he's there through it all. And one other verse in Isaiah that I think is good for our consideration. In chapter 50... And in verse 7, Isaiah says there, "The God helps me. Therefore, I have not been disgraced. Therefore, I have set my face like a flint, and I know that I shall not be put to shame." So we see first he starts with, "The Lord God helps me." That's what he is basing this on. He knows that it's the Lord. Do we, you know, everything that we see, he is the Lord of. He has created all these things. Nothing happens without, you know, him in some way or another consenting to it. He's the Lord of this world. Do we believe that? And then Isaiah believes that, and so he says, "I set my face like a flint." You know, he didn't care. Anything could come to him, it wouldn't change him. Just like God's unchangeable, he is unchanged. He, you know, Isaiah said, "My face is like a flint. I'm not going to be afraid. I've decided that." So I think that's a really great verse to remember. So that wraps up most of what I wanted to say. One final point I wanted to make, maybe on the opposite side of this, everything I've been talking about. I think it's probably not as much of a problem, but you can think about a battle analogy if that helps. But don't run stupidly into danger, getting yourself killed for nothing. You know, don't court temptation. Don't go looking for hard things and saying, "Oh, I'll be fine. Like, I'm strong. I'm tough. I can do whatever I want. I'm not afraid." I don't think that's the message here. And Cosmo, in the book that I read, he didn't do anything like that. He strove to do what was right and what was God's will. Not just the most dangerous thing he could find to do. It's not the daredevil mentality. It's just being, you know, whenever we feel the fear coming up in us, trying to keep us from doing what we need to, we ignore it. We say, "I'm going to do this. I've decided it's what's right. It's what God's will is." And it's a simple decision to make. So at this time, we'll offer the invitation. If there are any here who have not yet made the decision to believe in Jesus Christ, who have not yet believed that God redeemed the world through Jesus Christ, that if you would just come to him, you can, you know him, and you can know God through Jesus Christ. That's what he wants, is to know us and to be one with us. And that's why he is a holy and a worthy God. At least that's part of it. So if there's any that we can help, or any Christians that we can help who need the prayers of the congregation and want to come forth at this time, we'll stand and sing the invitation song.
Jesus is tenderly calling me.